Hello, everyone. This is Mo of We Talk Podcasts, and I'm welcoming you to our 56th show for We Talk Comics. This one I'm throwing out to you with an introduction because it's a little bit of a different format. Typically, We Talk Comics is hosted by myself and Chris and Brett and Keith, and we do a little bit of news at the beginning, our weekly news with Cub Reporter K, proudly sponsored by the Internet's best comic book website, Comicosity. And then we usually follow that up with a topic or two and a few reviews towards the end. Now, in this one, at the end of one of our shows, Chris kind of almost, it came up in topic almost jokingly. He mentioned something about us doing something similar to the Kiss solo projects that they did in 1978. And we thought, as soon as he mentioned it, I thought, that's a good idea. And we started talking about it, he and I back and forth, and using Lombox Graveyard, who does a fine solo podcast here on our website, kind of as an inspiration. We thought this solo project, Kiss Solo Projects idea, might actually be fun to do. And, of course, Keith was there, and we kind of managed to convince him. Brett, we told later, it took a little more prodding to get him into the idea. But we're going to do this. It's going to be, let's say, a chance kind of for everybody to learn maybe a little bit more about the personalities of each of the guys and, you know, certainly be very, very different. And if it doesn't maybe float your boat as much this time, you prefer our old, format. There's lots of episodes here available on We Talk Podcast for We Talk Comics, as well as within our iTunes. And you can also find us over at Comicosity. You can find a lot of the episodes there. And of course, there's lots of good comic book talk available with our friends at the Comic Podcast Network as well. But hopefully this one, like I say, we like to kind of mix things up and give you something different every now and then. And hopefully this one will come across as a lot of fun to everybody. So I know I'm looking forward to hearing the other guys' shows, and hopefully everybody else is too. And we're going to cut right now. We'll go to Brett first, then we're going to go to Chris. Or, sorry, we're going to go Brett, then Keith, and then Chris, and then myself to fill it out. So it'll be Brett, Keith, Chris, and then me. And we'll hopefully have a little bit of fun doing this. And if you're not careful, you might just learn something along the way. Mr. Make-Believe. Mr. Make-Believe. Let me live inside you, please.
Welcome to episode number 56 of We Talk Comics. Now, there's a couple of things that you're going to notice that's different right off the bat. Besides the music off the top, one thing that you're going to notice is that you haven't heard Mo speak yet. And while most of us would say that that's a very good thing, in this case, it's for a very specific reason. This episode is all of us doing solo podcasts. So, you get me right off the bat, and I'm Brett. And I am not the Crown Prince of Charisma in this case. I'll leave that to be Mo. But hopefully, over the next little while, you will be engaged enough with what I have to keep on listening and give everybody else a shot. But this kind of came of an idea of, Kiss's solo albums done in 1978. And the one thing that I'm hoping for out of this, and of course, since it's why we took our musical cues from there, the one thing I'm hoping for, though, is unlike Kiss, the solo albums really tore them apart. And I'm hoping that it doesn't do the same with us. I don't think that's very likely, but you know, here you go. This is Brett talking comics solo. Now, the thing that I really want to talk about is, as the only podcaster on We Talk Comics who has a child, you know, I have a son, and so it's a big concern for me overall to think about children entering the comics industry and more so becoming readers. I mean, if my son were to ever want to work in the comics industry, I would probably think I would be alternatingly proud and scared, because I just don't know how much he would be able to get work. And obviously, as a parent, I want him to work as a doctor or an astrophysicist, something that that is completely money-making, where he'll be able to easily find a job. But just as a reader, it is so interesting to me to try to sort out why the comics industry is the way it is and how we can get new people, especially children, and a new generation to come up as comic book readers like we were. I mean, I was introduced by a friend, essentially. I mean, I had always read comic books before. You know, I would read the single issues that you randomly pick up here and there. I didn't truly become a comic collector until I was in junior high school, and my one friend said, well, here's this comic book store, let's go. I collect comics there, and why don't you come with me? I did, and I became a comic books fan and a comic book collector from that moment on. And so this was nothing that my mother did for me, because, I mean, she didn't necessarily discourage my collection, but she didn't encourage it either. And so I think that as a parent now, and still a comic book collector and fan, I do actively seek to encourage him as a comic book collector. So I think that that's one of the interesting elements to me about doing this, is that how can I take somebody that I do want to be a comic book fan, and how do I make them a comic book fan, but also, more so, how do stores make new comic book fans, and how does the industry make new comic book fans? When I was a kid, it was really different, because there were way more comic book stores, for one. But comic books were also available easily on the newsstand. You had no shortage of being able to pick up, oh, I missed the latest Spider-Man in the stores. Well, I'll go to the newsstand. It won't be my favorite version of the comic, but it will still get me the comic book. You could also see the comic books in the stores. And I think that that was a real good quality, is that you were able to just be in any store, see a comic book, and think, wow, that looks pretty cool. I'm going to go pick that up at a comic book store. Now, one of the keys today, of course, is that there's so few comic books available on spinner racks. And I think that it's so hard to see those comic books now for a new reader. Unless that new reader is seeing it at their parents' place. And how often is that going to happen? I have no idea. Now, store locations. There's less than, in Calgary where we live, there is less than half the store locations now as there was 20 years ago. And so I think that that is a real huge difficulty, because before, it was fairly easy. You could go out, oh, I got a comic book store. If it's not by my house, then the comic book store is by my school. If it's not by my school, then it's on my route to school. If it's not there, then it's close to my grandparents' house. It's somewhere near where you would live or where you would be. Nowadays, though, you often have to make a huge trip to get out to that comic book store. And unless you have a friend or somebody else that you know who's willing to make that trip with you, then chances are good you're not going to get there. It's just not going to be a feasibility for you, because there's too many things that are trying to pry your attention away. I mean, nowadays with video games and all that stuff, with video games and movies, you can still see the same comic book characters, just not in the print form. And I think that is certainly going to draw interest away. Now, there's several things that are also holding kids back, in my opinion, from when I was a kid as well. Now, even to just start in the store, if a kid lives close enough to that store and is able to get into that store on a fairly regular basis, comic book stores, as a general rule, are built around the concept of file customers. I mean, you have your file or your pull box or whatever you want to call it, and you are locking yourself in as a regular customer at that store. Whether you get a discount or not, I mean, back when I collected, you got a discount. Whether that still occurs in most cases, it probably doesn't now. But you were essentially locking yourself in as a regular customer of that store. For a kid to get a file, and I know as a former comic book store owner, it is incredibly difficult to want to give a kid a file because they're not very consistent on coming in and their source of income is not consistent at all. And so the idea of giving a kid a file, it always seemed great to me as an owner, but I was always scared of the potential consequences in doing so, where you would give a kid a file, and then the next thing you know, they would not be coming back in for, 2 months to pick up all their books, and then they wouldn't even be picking up all their books. So it's difficult, and again, I mean, as a kid, if you miss one comic, you might not actually be interested in carrying on that comic as a series. You might just continue just picking up random books. And if you're just picking up random books, then you're willing to do that anywhere. It doesn't have to be at your local comic book store that's right beside you. It could be at the comic store at the, that you visit when you visit your grandparents or what have you. And so it's taking away from that store, that local comic book store that is really trying to build that business. Many stores have weak to average children's sections because there's not a lot of great children's books out there. I mean, you talk about the age range of a comic book like SpongeBob comic books, and adults are not reading SpongeBob comics. I mean, I love SpongeBob, love him to death, but the idea of actually sitting there and reading SpongeBob comics is just not really my thing. So you've got such a limited age range for most of these kids' comics that I think it's pointless to even try to sell them half the time. You have them around, but I mean, when I was a kid, my biggest influences in comics and wanting to read them were Richie Rich and Archie comics. I love those things, and I love them in digest format primarily. Richie Rich is cool, not so much anymore for me. Archie is still great. Like the old Archie comics, they still stand up to me today, and I'm happy to read them. But will my son be as happy to read those as I was? I don't know. I can't answer that question. And so right now, he likes the SpongeBob comics, but he can't read the SpongeBob comics. So I can buy them for him, but it seems like an exercise in futility, mostly. And so I think that these stores that have these kids sections, unless you can afford to stock a vast amount of them and have them sit on your shelf just basically to be there to look at for when the kids and their parents do come in, because I think that that's it. It's kids and parents who are coming in and looking at them, and the parents are saying, all right, you want some SpongeBob comics? I'll get you some SpongeBob comics right now. But as far as the idea of being a true collector and reader just from SpongeBob comics, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, another big thing is the price point. For me, when I was first starting out, granted, I didn't get a huge allowance. I think I maybe got $5 a week. Now, my son's not at a point where he would get an allowance, but when he is, I don't know what it's up to. Is it up to $20 a week? I don't know. But the truth is that on my $5, back when I first started collecting comic books, that would buy me pretty much, because most of the comics were at that time were 60 cents to a dollar, and eventually into a dollar and a quarter. And I think that I was able to buy, 4 to 5 comics for that $5 and probably still have money left over for candy or something else. Another thing was that it was pretty easy for me to be able to go and dig through change. Like I would be picking up my nickels, I'd be picking up my dimes, picking up my quarters, and I was usually able to, every couple of days, scrounge up enough money to buy one or two more comics. Because my friend and I would always be going to the comic book store when I was in junior high school every lunch. We had an hour for lunch, so that was 15 minutes to walk there, that was 15 minutes to shop at the store, 15 minutes to eat lunch, and 15 minutes to head back. And in that 15 minutes, I was always shopping. I was always looking for something else. And if I had this extra change sitting around, then I was happy to give it to them. And I think now, as you look at it, it's way harder to come up. Even doing the math of $20 with a $4 comic, you can still afford four comics and a little tiny bit of candy. But the idea of being able to scrounge up $4 or $8 to buy a couple of comic books seems way harder to me now. And perhaps it is different for kids nowadays, and I just don't know it yet. But the price point seems like a real difficulty for getting kids into comic books right now. And then when you talk about the price point being a difficulty, then you move that into digital. You know, the great elephant in the room of digital comics. And digital is such that when you look at it, it's a great thing on the outside. Kids are way more computer savvy. I mean, obviously, I had a computer when I was young, but the idea, if you had told me when I had my first computer that I would be able to read comic books on a computer later on in my life, I would probably look at the screen, I would look at the monochromatic green glow, and I would think to myself, but this comic's going to look like crap. And I would not be able to draw the line between the monitors that we have now and the monitors that we had back then. So digital is this fantastic thing because kids are so much more computer aware and they have so much better technology now than we ever did as kids. But I think one of the biggest things about technology that's really going to hold us back is they still have to get online to see it. They still have to, and I don't question, I mean, that somebody could be sitting there with their friend on staring at the computer screen and saying, hey, come on over here and check out this Comixology website. Like, I don't think that it's a difficult proposition to imagine two kids sitting in front of a computer looking at comic books. What I do think is a hugely difficult proposition is the concept that these kids are going to be able to buy the comic books online. The idea of myself just giving my son a credit card number just so that he can go online and buy comics is insane. And the idea of my son, like, because I take it back to myself again, and I think that if I had to clear it with my mother every single time that I wanted to buy comic books, I wouldn't have half the collection that I had, because there would undoubtedly be something holding it back on her perspective of me buying this comic book. And I mean, granted, yes, I went behind her back a lot and bought a lot of comic books. Because, you know, you can say, oh, look, I bought a couple of comics. And in this other bag is the other 40 comics that I bought, which you don't get to see. But to buy digital comics, a kid doesn't have a credit card. So the child is not going to be able to, per se, sneak those comics in. And if a child can't sneak those comics into the house, And I'm not saying that a child should be able to sneak comics into the house or should even have to. I don't want my son to have to sneak comics into the house. I want him to be proud of being a comic collector. I want him to be as proud as I am to be a comic collector. And I think that the idea of buying a comic online, it works great for us. You know, I'm the guy that you're marketing to. I don't question that. As a group of four, We Talk Comics is completely the guys that you're marketing to. But my son is not right now. And the idea that my son can't really go online and buy a digital comic, that he always has to say, Dad, I want to buy this comic. Can I buy this comic? And I look at it and I say, okay, and we buy it online for him. It would be so much easier if he had a store that he could easily go to and just take a little bit of change, buy a comic, whichever one that he wanted, hopefully not the adult ones that the store is selling him, even when they shouldn't be, like it was for me. But there's just so many reasons why things are so radically different nowadays. And I think that we lose sight of the fact that comic books are marketed completely at the older people who are already into comic books. That we're losing all this whole generation of fans that know the characters. Because the Avengers, Superman, Batman, all these characters have such complete and utter brand recognition. But we're losing them from a print perspective. They're always going to watch the movies. They're always going to play the games. I'm going to watch the movies and I'm going to play the games too. But we're losing them from a print perspective. And for me, that's a giant problem. And I think that comic book stores need to do more. And I think that the companies need to do more. I think they need to make comics that are better suited to children and adults. And I think that comic book stores have to make it easier, and they have to market and try to gather the younger generation to become comic book fans as well. I think until we do that, like, we could be seeing a real problem in another 20 years. Because I'm not going to say complete older end of the spectrum, but I am at the older end of the spectrum. There are comic book fans who are 10 years older than me. There are comic fans that are 10 years younger than me. They're 20 years younger than me. But you need to get younger fans. And until the market really sorts out what to do with digital, then I think it's going to be a real issue. And I want to see more out of the comic book retailers, and I want to see more out of the major publishers as well. But that's my thoughts right now. I'm Brett, B-R-E-T-T underscore WeTalk on Twitter. And I'm Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. And thanks for listening, and moving on. I'm back in the New York.
Welcome to the Booster Cave, the podcast exclusively about Booster Gold. No, I'm just kidding. That's to drive Brett up the wall. I could do a Booster Gold podcast, but I think after a year and a half of 3-hour episodes, bi-weekly, even I might run out of things to say about how fantastic Booster Gold is. Possibly. No, I think I've looked at a couple of different podcast ideas over the past year. I did seriously consider 900 Things, which is the blog now running on WeTalkPodcast.com about my 1-year experiment of bringing no new stuff into my life and making stuff go away. It was actually pitched as a solo podcast. And ultimately we decided that it was better as a blog. I've never kept up a regular blog. Certainly looking at our pal Longbox Graveyard, who does a weekly blog and does a monthly podcast for us, which is solo. I find myself quite drawn to Paul Longbox Graveyard's ideas and the way he expresses himself in the podcast. Great admiration for him. Great to have met him in person last summer at San Diego. Those rare occasions when you meet someone off in distant lands through the internet and actually get to meet face to face. One of the things that Paul in his in his podcast has been talking about is the accumulation of stuff and the obsession that we as fans have with the physical possession. In the same way that a book collector who lives blocks away from a library will need to own a book that they may never read again, but it's part of their collection. In my life, I've collected many, many things. Far too many. Music in various formats. Comic books in single and collected formats. Some of them in several different collected formats, in the case of something like Sandman that I bought off the rack, then bought again in trade paperback, then now have an absolute edition. I've read the absolute editions once. I read the trade paperbacks maybe 3 or 4 times, the single issues the same. Did I need to buy them over and over? When will the next time be I read them? These are questions that I'm asking myself quite a lot as I look at the accumulation. By coincidence, a term that I started referring to my collection as years ago, and also something that Paul calls his collection. I often say that I call it an accumulation because collection implies curation, and there don't seem to be enough choices being made in what is piling up at my house. Now, 900 Things is an experience that I will be going through for 52 weeks. For 1 year, I can watch anything I like, I can download anything, any content I want, I will be purchasing all of my comics through Comixology, and I will be watching movies that I either see in a movie theater or that I get through iTunes or another such provider, but I will not be getting hard copies of anything. I can still get a couple of things for Christmas, but I will not be purchasing any. And this is, I've actually had a concern that my experience through this is self-indulgent. I am being self-indulgent in not being self-indulgent. It's a bit like humble brag. I can afford to buy all these things, but I'm not going to because I'm a good person. But it's deeper than that. Ever since I was a kid, I have wanted a library of books. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted a ton of comic books. Always wanted more than I could possibly afford. There was always more in my pull list than I could afford to buy at the moment. And when I actually had money, I, like every other collector, grabbed all of those pieces. That's where the collector market comes from. It comes from people like me who never had a Jawa Sandcrawler when I was a kid because my parents couldn't afford to get it for me. I was spending my money on comic books. I couldn't buy one. And now, of course, they're worth a bundle because I have disposable income and I can buy them for a bundle. And I find that the accumulation adds to itself. That these things multiply, as my wife says jokingly and with a smile every time she enters the man cave here in the downstairs of my wonderful home, she sees something new. For the longest time, I enjoyed her saying something like that. And then there was a tipping point where I started worrying that that was really true. The deal that we had when we moved into this house is that I have one room. It is the studio where I record the show. It is my library where I have bookshelves of comics and novels and nonfiction books. It is the collection where my Jawa collection is, where my Booster Gold shrine is. And there really is a shrine that will soon be on Comicosity will be doing a feature on my Booster Gold shrine. This is the man cave. This is my little hideaway. And the deal was that I could do absolutely anything with this room that I wanted. And it is loaded. Every square inch of wall is covered with some form of comic book or movie related material. The shelves are covered in various forms of Jawas. Friday the 13th statue, Jason mask from Friday the 13th, signed material. It is a very comfortable room. I enjoy spending time in here. But I do worry that I have just loaded myself up with security blanket. And as my wife and I have talks of, what do we want to do with our lives in 5 years, 10 years? Do we want to travel? I look at this and it all looks like space and weight if I want to move on somewhere. I've traveled across this country back and forth, and I've lived in 6 provinces since I was 19 years old, out of the 10 in Canada, if you aren't familiar. I've been back in Alberta for almost exactly 10 years now, so most of it was between my 19th year and my 29th year. If I were to move again, I look at what I would really take with me and what is just stuck. And there is a point where it tips to more stuff than things that I love. 900 Things is about removing 900 objects, 900 pieces of stuff from my life. Now, as I said at the beginning of this, that's not the podcast I'm pitching. You can read that blog. Part of 900 Things is to finally, once and for all, break the connection to hard copy comics. Aside from the trade paperbacks of the books I love, which was the goal of the trade paperbacks. The trade paperbacks were never meant to be my reading pile. They were never meant to be the wait for the trade twice a year I'm purchasing a hard copy plan. They were supposed to be Sandman, Invisibles, Transmetropolitan, my favorite books. But they have become increasingly reading piles at conventions. Well, that's only $5. I've never read it, but $5. I will just get that. And then I have it. And sometimes that's great. Sometimes I discover a book like Madame Xanadu, for example, recommended to me. I grab the trades for fairly cheap, and it is becoming, I'm about halfway through them, and it does belong in my favorite books. But a lot of it doesn't. And I know there's a lot of talk of digital comics have no long-term value. So who cares? I had a complete collection of the New Universe. As far as buying my comics thinking that they were going to get long-term value, I have made horrible, horrible mistakes my entire life. I think I own 5 comics that I've ever owned, 5 comics that ever increased in value. It is such an oddity that it is that I celebrate when something I own in my collection actually has a resale value. When I worked at a comic store 20 years ago, it was during the speculator boom, and I would frequently get asked, which comics do I buy that will go up in value? And as I worked for minimum wage, it's 6-something an hour, I wondered what they thought I knew that I wasn't using. Retirement was only a couple of years away. Well, I'm not retired, and nothing that I purchased in those years that I worked at the comic store has kept the lights on or a roof over my head in that 2 decades hence. So digital comics are to be my reading venue, my media, and I do not care in the least that there's no resale value to digital comics, because as I said, they weigh nothing, they're transportable. If I do not read that comic again, it disappears into the ether, it stores somewhere in the archive function of Comixology. There is that risk that Comixology will go under and my collection will disappear. My basement could flood and my collection disappears too. That's not a threat. I'm fascinated by what Paul has been saying about his transition to digital and how, or his view on the how the transition should happen, because Paul's never going to be a digital comic reader full time. He's not built that way. He's got his Marvel subscription, and I think he enjoys that part of it. For me, digital comics got me back into comics. I had finally broken myself of the physical collection, had dumped most of my collection down to what were my favorite books, and broken free of the idea that I had to have full sets of anything. Digital comics is the ultimate bargain bin. There will be no hunting for a book anymore, which is good and bad. I miss that part sometimes. The days of pre-comic store, where you'd have to go from store to store, convenience store to convenience store, looking for the new issue of something. And the horrible feeling when you saw that something was to be continued into a book that you never saw anywhere. I can remember as a kid, the first time I saw to be continued in a different comic, it was an Amazing Spider-Man, it was to be continued in Fantastic Four, or vice versa. Or possibly it was Marvel Team-Up into Fantastic Four, I don't quite remember. And I remember the joy of finding the second part of that book. I remember the joy of that hunt. That hunt goes away. And now that hunt stayed with back issues. I have never put a collection of Miracle Man together. I've never read a single issue of Miracle Man, though I hear it's amazing. It is not collected. It's not available digitally. And I was never able to put a collection together in 20 years. And because I never had a complete collection, I never read a complete collection. Well, because I never read a complete collection, I never read a single issue. Swamp Thing was much the same thing. I went so many years without having put together a collection of Swamp Thing that I never read an issue. I knew I would enjoy it. I enjoyed all of Alan Moore's work from that time period. And it wasn't until just a few months ago that I finally was able to borrow that set and read it. And there were independent books that I have never finished. Books that once I did put a few issues together and tried to read an arc, realized that I'd been hunting for something that I wasn't going to enjoy anyway. That hunting search is something I miss about comics, and it's something that I may miss about accumulating. If I were to do a solo podcast, I think the experience of breaking free of the physical ownership, a personal story, the questions I'm asking myself in 900 Things of why I have been attached to these physical things and what they really mean to me. Why I feel security in a library and a movie collection, and is the joy that I have from my collection of Jawas and my collection of Booster Gold material greater than my collection of Alf Flight action figures, which is actually only a couple. So if it's only a couple and I don't want to expand the collection, why not contract the collection? For digital comics, I enjoy the format. I bought a tablet over the summer specifically to read comics on. I held out to get a 16:9 Android tablet as opposed to an iPad because the aspect ratio is closer to that of a comic book. It does give you more physical space for a comic book page than an iPad does. And I think I'm I think I'm there. I think that I enjoy the tangible, and as I said, the best books, my favorite books, the ones I could pull off the shelf at any time, I do want those off the shelf. But the monthlies, I'm not sure that buying Red Lanterns Volume 1 was really worth it, I'll be honest. I enjoy the book. I don't know if it's really what I'm going to pull off the shelf routinely the way I would Transmetropolitan, which I read just before the election, or Invisibles, which I will attempt to read prior to December 21st. I'm not sure Red Lanterns falls in that category, and part of my experience over the next year is breaking free of that sense that I see it by it. I want to get back to what I really enjoy about comics, which is the experience of the serialized story and the experience of being done with something when I'm done with it. One of the great things about digital comics is I can go back to a series from 5 or 10 years ago, in some cases, not everything's available yet, and I can read one issue and decide whether that's something I want to get all of today or whether I never want to open it again. And I can't do that in the dollar bins. I can't do that at a show. Well, that reaches the end of my podcast pitch. I don't really know where I got to. Was the digital comics experience the right answer? Is 900 things the right answer? Or after I've rambled for 19 minutes, is the answer that maybe the Booster Cave was the right answer? All in all, Booster Gold is usually the answer. Thank you very much. This is the end of my solo.
I'm your host, Chris. I gotta admit something here. This solo thing, all my fault. I made a bad joke. Keith got an erection over it. We have a policy of never fighting with Keith when he has an erection. This week, instead of talking with all my buddies about geek stuff and like that, I'm stuck in a room all by myself talking to you guys. Not that you're not good conversationalists, but the fact that you guys don't hear this for a couple days till we put it on the web kind of sucks. I need my geek talk. But instead, I'm going to use this time. That's right. I have an agenda. An agenda to get you all on my team, to get you buying the same stuff so I can get some rare stuff. Also, I got a couple beefs with the guys. And I'm just going to say it. You know what? You know Mo's little intro where he asks us the questions? He asks one question, like, every 3 or 4 weeks. What are we reading, and what are we watching? I love this question, but I'm never freaking prepared, because he doesn't tell us what the question is going to be. Now, usually it's something stupid. Apples or oranges. Hamsters or ferrets. Who would win in a fight between a hamster and a ferret? Now, those questions are easy to, you know, riff something off. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it bombs. You know, that works for me. But when he asks the what are you reading and what are you viewing, I can never remember. And usually, for some reason, like, the only thing I can think of is, like, I've been watching Two Girls, One Cup on repeated view. I don't want to say that because, well, I'm not that sick, honestly. And it's not that entertaining. But as soon as the question is passed on to the next guy, you know what? I have an answer. I have a better answer than the one I came up with. And quite frankly, I'm interested in what the other guys have to say. And I think that's an interesting question. What are you pairing? Are you watching this movie? What are you doing this week? And that's what I want to hear from you guys on Twitter. That's why I like Twitter. I like sort of lurking there and finding out what other people are reading and viewing and what they think is cool. But every week he asks this question. When I prepare something, he doesn't ask. When I don't prepare something, he does ask. And it drives me absolutely insane. But anyway, so starting off this podcast, that's what I'm going to tell you. What am I reading? I am reading From Hell. Alan Moore, Eddie Campbell, great book. Really, really thick and dense and confusing. And I've been reading this and just trying to forget that there was a movie made. But there's some awesome scenes in that movie. Scenes that are in the book. So I keep flashing back and thinking about this movie. But the movie sucks and it changes the whole Jack the Ripper thing. I like the multiple things in the book. So I might end up watching it and putting down the book because, well, let's face it, I only have 20 or 30 minutes at a time usually to read. And it is quite an endeavor. And I'm just trying to resist temptation. What am I viewing? That is a much better, much more interesting question because this is the point where I'm going to try to sell you stuff, because we need more stuff like this. I am currently watching the greatest cartoon from the 90s ever made, Earthworm Jim. I'm holding it in my hand. I've been watching it episode by episode, laughing my ass off. Highly recommend you pick this up. It's only like $18 on Amazon. You know what? If you order this, maybe we can like get... eat the cat out of Fox Hell, or, I mean, we need more, like, cheap-ass DVDs of cartoons. But I'm a minority on that one, but highly recommend. In fact, you know what? I'm going to just stop here, and it's only going to take, like, a minute. Let's listen to the theme song. If you don't laugh your ass off, well, you know what? Too bad.
Jim. The soil he did crawl.
Jim.
A super super fall. Jim was just a dirt eating chewy link of worm flesh, but all that came to a crashing end.
Jim.
He's such a groovy guy.
Jim.
He rockets through the sky, cruising through the universe, having lots of fun. Here comes Earthworm Jim, you know that he's a mighty one. Look out! Despite his great big muscles and his really big ray gun, Jim is still an earthworm, but then he's the only one with a super suit to make him really super strong. Jim can be a winner if we only sing along.
All right.
Earthworm
Jim.
We think he's mighty fine.
Earthworm Jim.
A hero for all time.
Earthworm Jim.
Hooray
for him.
Groovy.
God, I love that. The gravy just cracks me up. But right now, I'm going to do something a little bit different. We're enough of this fooling around. Let's get to the comic books. And this is what I'm calling...
The Pull List.
That's right, the Pull List. I don't know if that little sound effect worked. Oh, well. Now... I'm not going to list off every book coming out this week. Don't worry about that. But, and I'm not going to review these books. Quite frankly, I haven't read them all yet. But I am going to, just tell you what is exciting this week. Books that'll cause you to go to the store. If you haven't been to the comic book store yet this week, this is some motivation for you. What is to be excited about? Well... What I think is going to be the best book of the week is Before Watchmen, Moloch. Once again, our Babylon 5 friend Joe writing the book. That is going to be a book. Also, Valiant relaunching The Shadow Man. That could be interesting. I don't really... caught into the new look. I was a fan of the previous version, but could be interesting. If you're into horror, Colder from Dark Horse is coming out. I picked up a copy, and really cool art on that. But right now, I think that one's going to the bottom of the pile. We also have Avengers Academy, last issue. Now, Chris Gage has been writing up a storm on this book. I'm actually several issues behind, but this is the last issue, you know, last chance to get it before these characters spin off into Marvel now, into a book that I think is so going to be incredibly hot. It's spinning off into Avengers Arena. Now, this book is just going to be pitting young Avengers against each other by arcade. Doesn't sound like a full series to me, but man, you put the young Avengers. I love the young Avengers. I love the trainees. I love the runaways. Put them in a giant pinball machine and force them to fight. Now that's a comic book. Moving on. This one, you know what? I picked up on a whim because it has the most interesting title. The Perhapnots. Now, this one is from Image, and you know what? The cover looks exactly like the title. I'm just waiting to read it, but it's something to be excited about anyway. Marvel's relaunch in Deadpool, in spite of the fact that there's a dinosaur on this on the cover of this book. You know what? I'm not seeing much difference from the previous incarnation, but you know what? It's Deadpool. People love their Deadpool. They wouldn't keep trying to make a movie if there wasn't a Deadpool. And the relaunch of Iron Man. Now, this Marvel Now is getting off to a pretty long start. But if that's not enough to entice you to go to the comic book store, pick up some of these books, you now know what's in the store. You know what? I'm going to give you one more. And this is what I'm going to call top of the pile. Top of the pile. You know, I always try to pick one book every week. The one I'm going to read first. Now, you'd think, since I'm looking forward to Moloch the most, that's where I'm going. No, that's not how I play things. I'm always looking for something new. So I want to be shocked, because I know if I start with Moloch, everything else is downhill. But if I pick out something weird, something I think can be good, that is the cream. You know, you're not going to get a winner every time, but when you do, you fall in love with comic books all over. This week's top of the pile is a dollar book. Let's put that straight out there. Dollar book from Boom Studios. Not traditionally a fan, but this book looks fantastic. Haven't read it. As I said, haven't dived into the pile. But this is Freelancers number one. Now, I'm just going to give you a little read up here, because you know what? I'm looking at the cover. Two hot chicks with guns fighting what seems to be some sort of tattooed monster freak. No, sort of had me at hello. And let's just see what the internet has to say about this book. Money Talks. Val and Cassie are two women trying to make it in L.A. who just happen to have grown up in a kung fu orphanage, and now make their way in the ultra-developed competitive world of bounty hunting. Okay, now you definitely have me at hello. Because, you know, kung fu orphanage, where I'm adopted. You know, I love my parents and stuff, but kung fu freaking I could have been Jackie Chan instead of a fat geek. I need this in my life. Also, bounty hunters, I'm all there. It's a buck. Pick this book up. I'm kind of excited. You should be too. Alrighty, I mentioned before, this is where I'm airing some beefs. Nothing big, but stuff that I wish we could do on the podcast, which, you know, never works out. You know, when Mo first pitched this, we thought we'd do fanboy film reviews. We've done one. Now, I'm kind of a film geek, and I love that crap. And it's not that other guys don't watch movies, but we can never get all of us to watch the same movie at the same time. You know what? We did two. Two fanboy reviews. 56 episodes, I believe, this week. I could be wrong. I'm not looking the internet. But two. And both times, they were crappy movies. And I was forced to play devil's advocate. Hell, I argued for The Spirit, and it wasn't that good a movie. And I said that, but I liked it more than the other guys. So I ended up arguing with them. Well, you know what? Screw that. I'm going to tell you guys, go see a good movie. You know, one I don't have to apologize for. One I've told the guys time and time again. Actually, I believe I've only bug mode, come to think of it. Since I saw it, I haven't talked to the other two guys. How silly of me. But this movie rocks. If you have not seen Dread 3D, you know what? You are missing out. It is so hardcore. And what I love about it is the simple premise of two cops go into a building with big ass guns and they lock the doors. Turns out there's nothing but criminals in this building. You know what? That's the whole movie. If you like violence, if you like blood, if you like crap blowing up all over the place, it is the movie for you. Now, you may have read on the internet, it is very similar to a foreign movie called Raid Redemption. It is. But that's the genius of this formula. Violence. Lack of story. It's kind of my thing. See this movie. You know what? I'm going to stop the podcast once again. I don't know why I keep doing this. I'm going to play you the trailer. You know what? You can't see the video, but the audio alone should tell you what this movie is.
She has control of everything. Levels 1 to 200.
This is Mama. Somewhere in this block are two judges.
That's not good.
I want him dead.
We're going to have to go through him. Rookie, you ready?
Yeah.
You look ready. Judgment time.
Let's finish this.
Mama is not the law. I'm the law. Negotiation's over. The sentence is death.
See now, that's Dredd. He doesn't take off the helmet. No Rob Schneider. No Pasta Robot. What the hell was that Pasta Robot thing in the Stallone version anyway? Gives me a headache just thinking about it. I mean, come on, guys. And I like Stallone, but that movie was kind of painful in its own way, especially if you're familiar with Dredd. But anyway, new movie, thumbs up. Oh, I can't use thumbs up. That's owned by somebody. Well, I liked it anyway. Go see it. If that's your thing, if you like testosterone, that's what this movie is. That's why you should see in this movie. And, you know what? I think I got all my beefs off. I told you about some books that look good. You should go to the comic book store, read, you know, tweet me. If you got a question about comic books, if you want to talk about comic books, that's the place to get a hold of all of us on We Talk Podcasts. And you know what? We love talking about this crap. I'm Chris _ We Talk on Twitter. Chris @ We Talk Podcasts.com. If you want to shoot us an email, shoot me an email. Tell me I'm an idiot. Tell us what you want to hear. If you got a wacky idea like this four solo podcasts, do it. If you got a blog idea, if you have longer ideas, if you want to comment on something, now shoot that off to us. This is your show. Rate us on iTunes. That helps us get more listeners. I hope I wasn't boring you. And, you know what? You made it to the end. So, end of my podcast. Anyway, I have no idea what the other guys are doing. I'm out. Have fun. See you next week.
It's Mo here, of course, hosting my own segment as well on this show. Thank you, everybody, for joining me flying solo. I'm going to be taking a look here at the elements of what makes a good comic book. That will be my main topic, along with a couple other things that hopefully I plan to get to. Now, I have to admit, I am a bit of a liar, because I sat here right now and I said to you guys, this is a solo project, and that was the idea, but I'm just not comfortable doing a solo project, so I brought on actually a couple friends to join me on the show. So I have here a Starfire. Say hello, Starfire.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good, good. Nice to see you, Starfire. Nice of you to join us. And, of course, Thanos. Thanos, a good buddy of mine, has decided to come on. So that's awesome. How are you doing, Thanos?
Howdy.
Typical Thanos introduction there, I guess. So Thanos is also going to be joining us, and hopefully the three of us will have a little bit of a good discussion on the major topic of the week. And
hello everyone, I'm happy to be here too.
Who invited Machine Man? That's what I would really like to know. Who made the decision to...
I invited myself.
Invited yourself? Machine Man, nobody wants you here. I mean, even honest to God,
if he stays, I don't.
Machine Man, even Thanos thinks you're a dick. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, come on.
Hey, Starfire, how are you doing, cutie?
Good, good. Thanks, sir. How are you, Machine Man?
Excellent.
I don't need any flirting on my show. That's, this is... Machine Man, okay, we'll tell you what. You can stick around, but if you do, don't get too involved. thank you. Oh, this is going to be a nightmare. What do you think, Thanos? Maybe we should open up with a joke, Thanos. You told me you had a good joke for the week, and let's open up with that instead of with a little bit of a more serious topic, because this show has already gone off the deep end. That didn't take very long, and this may not turn out to be a good idea. But what do you think, Thanos? What's the joke you have?
How many Batman does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I'm not sure. How many?
None. They're like the Dark Knight.
Well, maybe we should avoid the jokes from now on. That might be a better idea, if that's what you got there, Thanos. Thanks for that. Yeah.
Batman, on his little league team, what did he play?
I don't think we're on another joke here.
He was the Bat Boy.
Yeah, no, that's why we didn't want another joke. That's the exact reason why we didn't need that. But thanks again. I appreciate you joining me here, and it was.
I have a joke. What do you find in Superman's bathroom? The Super Bowl.
So on to this week's big topic. Like I say, we're going to analyze what it is we're not letting you, Starfire, tell a joke too. We're going to analyze what it is that makes the elements of a good joke. Because if you listen to my reviews, you'll often hear me talk about how what we got going on here is, you know, I'll talk about the pacing and the dialogue and this and that. I want to analyze for you just a little bit for me what these things mean. So you guys kind of understand when I'm talking to you what it is I'm trying to say about these different subjects. So let's move on here and talk a little bit. Now, dialogue is kind of one of those things. There's a famous line, for lack of a better term, about porn, where they say, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. And good dialogue for me kind of runs along the same lines. It can be a little bit difficult to describe what makes for good dialogue. But bad dialogue is certainly very easy to pick up. I criticized recently Marvel or DC Universe. Was it DC Universe Presents, number 13? The one with Blue Devil and Black Lightning. I talked about Mark Andrinko's dialogue because it was really, really poor. And I talk often about how anytime a writer feels to me that poor dialogue is generally when anytime a writer feels to me like he doesn't truly understand the character, so he's overcompensating by creating dialogue that is inorganic. And good dialogue to me is like Scam. Joe Mulvey's dialogue in that, to me, I really like because it's very organic. In the real world, people talk and they're generally, I mean, I don't know about where you work, but since the room I work in, people are very, you know, talkative and very quick and always making a lot of jokes. And it's a natural dialogue. There's not a lot of difference in the tones and the inflections and the actual words that we use. So anytime you say that you need to make characters that speak completely different from each other, I don't think that's right. But I do think anytime you're trying very difficult to distinguish the characters, or for instance, if you're writing a young character to try and make him sound like he's young, I think you're missing the point. Good dialogue is anything that is organic to the situation and the characters and comes across as flowing nicely. Bad dialogue is any time that the writer does not truly understand the characters that he's doing. He doesn't truly understand the kind of the what he's going for, so he overcompensates, like I say, and it starts to come across as stilted or forced, or simply comes across like sound bites. It's very easy to use dialogue that comes across as though it's come off of a television show or a movie or anything along that nature. And I think that's kind of hopefully explains to you when I'm talking about good dialogue, what I'm looking for, dialogue that simply feels organic. It doesn't necessarily have to distinguish all the characters between different type of speech patterns or different words. It simply has to, hopefully there, it just simply enhances their characters and comes through part of the overall package and flows is organic nicely. And Starfire, I see you over there. You're still mad because you didn't get to tell your joke. So why don't you go ahead.
Thank you. I have a few, actually. Can I tell some Aquaman jokes? What does Aquaman use to paint? Watercolors. Who does Aquaman call when he needs help? Michael Phelps. How was Aquaman's son delivered? A C-section.
You know, I think that's probably enough because those were awful. Thank you so much, Starfire. I don't mean to insult you. They were pretty much terrible, though. You know, I let's not. What's?
I know a good Aquaman joke. This isn't terrible. Listen to this. Get this. Why does Aquaman wear a base? Why does Aquaman wear a seashell brassiere? Or Mrs. Aquaman? Why does Mrs. Aquaman wear a seashell brassiere? She's too big for D-shells and too small for D-shells. That's hilarious. Laugh. I said laugh, or I'll kill you.
That's funny. Whew. Thank you, Machine Man, for not telling a joke. Or flirting with Starfire anymore. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Let's move on. And I think we're all grateful to do that. Moving on from dialogue. What we got here, I talk about the pacing. Pacing for me in comic books is kind of simple. What I'm talking about generally with pacing is how well, generally for me, they integrate the words and the pictures. That's usually for me kind of what pacing in comic books means. If it's an artist, how well is the artist communicating with the script writer to get across what the script writer has written for him and understanding and putting it out there and making it so it flows nicely. How well does the script writer describe things, flow things, and set things up so that they fit in the right pace. The pacing can be off very easily in comic books. Usually when I get confused by a story, when I feel something's missing, when it's not making sense to me, it's because the pacing is what's off. So with the poor pacing, I tend to distribute that to the fact that the writer, or perhaps it's a writer-artist, and he just simply doesn't understand. He's strong at one medium, not so strong at the other. So pacing is really, to me, that's what it comes down to. How well-paced is a book? It should never be too fast, never be too slow. It should continually move things on, flow naturally, flow nicely. And it should be about how well that dialogue and the art merge together. So when I talk about pacing, that's generally what I'm talking about. At least from my point of view, that's what I see pacing as being within the world of comic books. So I got a joke I'm going to tell for everybody because I thought this one was pretty good. So when is Joker not plotting a murder? When he's riding his Harley. Huh? Wacka, wacka, wacka. Hey, what did Batman say to Robin when they got in the Batmobile? He said, "Get in the Batmobile, Robin." See, because he's a hard ass. See how that works? at least I'm making myself laugh. I don't hear the other three of you saying anything. Machine Man, you got your hand raised. Why are you here?
I'm here because I'm hilarious. Listen to this. Why does Poison Ivy change her underpants? Because they got soiled.
Well, that's kind of disgusting, actually. But thank you. Thank you.
I'm here to tell a longer joke.
We don't need a longer joke. Why are you going to... Thanos, can you tell...
Yes, stop it. I'll leave.
Fine, leave. Nobody wants you here anyways. Starfire, don't leave. I want you here.
Thanks, Machine Man.
Anyways, here's my longer joke. A week after his wife left him, Jim went to the local watering hole. After a long evening of drinking, Jim was thrown out of the bar as usual. On his way home, he spotted a nun walking down the road. After looking at her twice, he ran over and tackled her. Then he proceeded to beat the living daylights out of her. He's vomiting on her, some people were passing by, and called the police. After the police had pulled him off at home, Godfrey looked back and said, "I thought you'd be tougher than that, Batman. I thought you'd be tougher than that, Batman." It's nothing. No. Made me laugh.
Well, I had to make somebody laugh. Thank you. Thank you, thank you for hijacking the entire show. Hey, what doesn't Hawkman communicate with birds? Because talk is cheap. That's probably a little better, a little more up our. Anyways, we're moving on. Oh, it's like the morning zoo around here. If the morning zoo had comic book characters. And anyways, we're moving on. Let's talk a little bit about the art. What makes for good art for me? Again, art is something I think art is very subjective. It's very difficult for me to say what I think is good art, for you to say is good art too. Some artists are just brilliant and everybody can kind of see it, but art to me is not, I mean, there could be guys that somebody thinks is awesome and I don't like it all. And that doesn't mean that person is wrong saying that they think that person is awesome or that I'm wrong saying that they're not. it means that art is just very, very subjective. Comic book art to me is different than any other form of art, of course, because you're telling a story. And really what you're doing, and as talk about as Scott McCloud's understanding comics, really what you're doing is you're filling in people's heads the little movements. For instance, if a person is in a panel, and the next panel they've turned their head, your mind in your head makes that movement for the character. Visually, it fills it in. And so comic books have to understand this. The comic books are, of course, and we talk about this, it comes back to pacing a little bit. Comic books are very much a visual medium. The words are important, but it's a visual medium first. So the artists, for me, what do they need to do? Yes, I really want to be able to see the expressions in the faces. I'm not huge on backgrounds. That's not really the big deal for me. I'm not somebody who sits there and goes, oh, I need painted art. I need this and that. I really like characterizations that distinguish each other from themselves. I like to see character faces. I like to be able to see the emotions of what they're thinking. That, to me, is what makes for a good art. But overall, different panels, the way they come at it, I don't want a static, the same type of shots. I want dynamic camera angles, as I guess you would say. And I'm looking for, essentially, of course, because it is a visual medium, transitions between panels and pages and situations and scenes, this is highly important, and if it's clever, I really appreciate that more. Art, to me, is still evolving in comic books and getting better. I mean, the artists, I think, are better now than they've ever been, but the way they use it and the way they use the pages is continuing to be exciting and interesting. But really, what it comes down to, when I say I look at somebody who is, I mean, I can look at Riley Rossmo on Bedlam here, and I think that's tremendous art. And then I look at Kurt Swan, and I think in Superman, and that's tremendous art. And there couldn't be anything else that is more different from each other between these two things. But what is it, though, that for me works is both of them manage to set the mood of the story. So art for me, when I talk about what I'm talking about for art, generally that's my big thing. Is how well is that person setting the mood for the story? I tend to really, really go for that. That's my biggest thing. So you know, if they can manage to do that, I'm really generally pretty happy with the art that I'm looking at, if it sets me in the mood for the character and the story and the situations. So that's kind of my goal. And
I am upset because you didn't let me tell more jokes.
No, well, nobody else is upset by that. You're kind of, nobody really wanted you here, even. I mean,
I'm going to tell more jokes, and you're not going to like them.
Well, I know. Nobody is.
Here they go. Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn. They're deciding out of their mind. They're going to rob a place, and they go down to the Gotham City Bank, and she said, Poison Ivy tells Harley, don't remember the plan. Yada, yada, no problem, says Harley. Poison Ivy says, no, walk into the bank. Poison Ivy says, and she walks into the bank, and Ivy says, gets in the getaway car, and the time passes, and Ivy's starting to get worried. It's 10 minutes go by, and 15 minutes go by, and Ivy's thinking about driving away. She's worried Harley's probably blown it, you know, blown the plan, and suddenly Harley comes rushing out with a bank tray, and a safe behind her, all tied up with a rope. I mean, Harley, the guard, comes running out with his hands down. Ivy groans, Harley, you made it. I seem to tie up the guard and blow the safe. Not the other way around.
We're getting a little crude now, aren't we? I mean, We Talk Comics is generally that's at least a PG-13 joke. You know, this is why we didn't want you on there, Machine Man. You have no decorum.
You know,
I cutting you off now because I don't want any more of that. We want to keep a classy website, a classy show.
Here's a classy joke from me. Hey, what has 142 teeth and holds back the Incredible Hulk? My zipper.
Why am I should have just done this by myself. This is not a good idea. Oh, my God. I still got one subject less to talk about, and, you know, not too long to do it.
I have a joke to tell about the Incredible Hulk. Oh, this is great. When Bruce Banner gets mad, he turns into the Hulk. And when the Hulk gets mad, he turns into Chuck Norris.
That was pretty good, actually. That's not bad. That's not bad. Here's my joke. What's the difference between Iron Man and Iron Woman? Iron Man is a superhero and Iron Woman is a command. Oh, I didn't say that out loud, did I? Because that's, yeah. Why is Superman stupid? Because he wears underwear over his pants. Why is Batman more stupid? Because he wears underwear over his pants and puts a belt on. It's, no? Where does Superman park? On Lois Lane? What does Diana wear on a date? Wonder Bra? What do you call it when Wonder Woman breaks wind? An invisible jet? Any of these working for anybody? Anybody out there? Is anybody still listening? Yeah. I know.
Here's another one. I got one. There you go. What's the difference between Magneto and MacGyver? Magneto wears women's pants, not women's hairstyles.
I love MacGyver.
MacGyver. He was great. So is Magneto. Why did Magneto like a woman like Magneto? He's attractive.
Little something you want to tell us about you and Magneto? Anyways, we're going to move on here, because we're not...
We're not moving on. I have another joke here, because, all right, what do you call sex with Quicksilver? The Second Coming. Our writers of X-Men Origins, they can't just ruin a light bulb, one. But all the X-Men fans, they should have had a job, they've been doing it.
That's not so much really a joke, that last one, as a factual statement. All right. We're going to move on, because we're running out of time here. We're going to get the last thing, and that's characterization. To me, I don't think you really need to. I don't mind if characters have stereotypes. In fact, I really dislike it when somebody goes out of their way to try and make a really wacky, original character if it's not organic. Again, what is the characterization? It kind of fits into your whole idea there of the kind of the whole idea that we had about dialogue. The dialogue enhances the characterization. The look of the character is enhanced by the art. Characterization just simply means that for me, when I talk about good characterization, I feel like when I'm reading the book and I'm hearing from these guys almost immediately that what we got here is a writer and an artist who know what this person is. And if I feel like this person has lived more than just this one day on the panel, if I feel like this character has an entire backstory, things I don't know about him, things that are hinted at, subtle things, to me that's characterization more so than anything else. Because you can only do so much, especially when you're introducing somebody. How real do they feel? How much of a full person do they feel? That's the characterization. And that can be done through a lot of the subtle things. It doesn't take a lot of time. But you do need some characterization to get across to everybody, kind of who the characters are, obviously characters and characterizations. But yeah, it comes through those subtle things of not necessarily attempting to make something or reinvent the wheel, as trying to make somebody who is feels like they have existed for longer than what I've known them for, and that sense that they are truly alive. That, to me, is what makes good characterization. So we're going to go out with a few more jokes. I'm at the 20-minute mark where I'm supposed to go that. I got a bunch of jokes here, and what the hell, I'm going to burn through them. I'm going to get my friends here to do them as well. A guy walks into a bar on top of a skyscraper. He sits down next to a buff-looking guy, looking like he's had a little more booze than he can handle. And the buff guy looks at the bartender and says to him, "Hey, do you know this building's constructed in such a way that if I jump out the window, the wind would glide me safely to the ground?" The man, who decided he could use a laugh then, who sat next to this buff guy, says, "Prove it." And the buff guy walks over, out the window, jumps out. A few minutes later, he walks back up into the bar. He looks again at the bartender, shaking his head, laughing, and says, "Do that again." So he does it again. The astonished man, the man who sat down next to him, can't believe it. He thinks that's the coolest thing ever. He says, "Here, take my phone. Take a picture of me as I do this. I'm going to show everybody on the internet." And he jumps out the window and smashes to his death. And, you know, the bartender says, "You know, you're a real asshole when you're drinking, Superman." Anyways, that's because anyways, all right. I guess we'll go out on that one, and
we're not gonna go out. I have some things I want to say to Thanos because he's been bothering me. And I say, "Thanos, your mama so fat, she uses Captain's shield as a plate. Captain America, that is, his shield as a plate. And your mama's so old, she used to babysit at Hopless. Your mama slipped on Shasha. She might think an ass on Hopless at L. Jackson. See what I did there? See what I did there.
That's uncalled for. I mean, I don't like you, but I wouldn't ever insult your mama. Your mama's so raggedy she can tell she had a rough. I said, how life's been treating you? She said, it's been grim. Your mama's so supportive she can make Plastic Man feel important. Your mama's so stupid she thought vibranium was something they put in damn doubles to make them move. Your mama's such a hoe she went to a comic shop just to catch a glimpse of at a giant-sized man thing.
All right, that mama jokes, they're awesome. You know what? Your mama's so hairy, B said damn. Your mama's so old, she took Vandal Savage's virginity. You get it? Vandal Savage? Because he's immortal. Your mama's so ugly, she's the real reason Scarlet Witch said, no more mutants. No? Anybody? I thought they were pretty good.
Oh, I got one! Here! Your mama's so useless, Brian Michael Bendis won't write about her!
Don't be ridiculous. Brian Michael Bendis will write about anybody. Oh, yeah.
Oh, here's one for you. I got one for you there. Machine Man, your mama's such a hoe. Even Starfire's offended.
Hey!
Sorry.
It's okay, Starfire. That's what I love about you. I got one for you. You can insult my mom. Here we go. Your mama's so dumb, she made Impossible Man say, but it's impossible. Your mama's so ugly, she made Batwoman go straight. Your mama's so ugly, even Tony Stark couldn't get drunk enough to bang her. Your mama's so fat, even Batman couldn't figure out where she begins.
That was a good one. I like that one. I got one here. Your mama's so stupid, she thought Batman and Robin was a good movie. Huh? Huh? Whack. Your mama's so ugly, she gave Matt Murdock sight, and then he asked if he could give it back. Huh? Huh? No? Oh, I thought my jokes would be the funniest.
My jokes are the funniest. Your mama's so fat, she has to use a glory man as a tampon. Your mama's so fat, it couldn't even break her skin.
Oh, I got it! Your mama's so fat, she's the best at what she does, and what she does is eat.
No.
I got one. Here we go. Your mama's so fat, Odin declared her a new realm. Your mama's so fat, when she fell, Flash didn't even try to run away.
That's pretty good. You know what? I think that's enough, though. I think, absolutely.
That's not enough. I got another one. Your mama's so fat, when Robin didn't draw her feet, she made mine because she hasn't seen her feet in 30 years.
Yeah, that's true about my mom, and we really shouldn't.
Oh, I got it. Infinite Crisis. A Superman held up a falling skyscraper. Your mama was falling at the same time, but she wasn't saved because Superman wanted to take it easy on his back.
My mom's a saint, everyone. All right, here's a joke about my mom is so fat, Saturn Girl had to look a week ahead just to see all of her. And that's it. I'm out. Mo, at We Talk Podcast. Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. There is no E on my name. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we're OUT, or at least I am.